Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And hello, everyone. Mr. Tim not here today. Fred Jackson sitting in for Tim on this 29th day of December, Thursday. This is, the last of the live TIs for the year. And with me in studio is Walker Wildman, taking care of Facebook business and all other things. Welcome.
Thank you, Fred, for having me in.
And let me be the first to wish you New Year, Happy New Year, because probably we're not going to the same parties this weekend.
I doubt it. My wife and I are going to go to Nashville.
To Nashville?
Yeah, we're going to go to Music City, and I really don't know all the technicalities, but I know something about a guitar. The guitar note drops maybe at 1 a.m. Okay. On New Year's Eve.
Oh, all right. So not New York, but Nashville.
Nashville.
All right. Yeah. And joining us also, one of our regular hosts is Mr. Ray Pritchard, Dr. Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries, and he is in Dallas.
Morning, Fred. Morning, Walker. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing great. Big plans for New Year's for you, Ray?
We're staying up late. I think we may stay up to 10 p.m. on Saturday night. All the way till 10, you know?
Well, you sound like me. You know, my wife and daughter give me the hardest time because I don't stay up and watch the big ball fall there
right.
in New York.
Right.
Here's my reasoning. You know what? I can watch the video the next morning.
That's right.
Don't need to stay up and watch that, but it's always an exciting time. I think the last time I stayed up really late was, you remember the big scare when it went from 1999 to 2000?
2000, right.
And everybody thought the computers all over the world were going to fail.
Right.
And
Y2K.
Y2K. There you go. Man, I remember that.
But you know, the latest I've stayed up recently was election night.
Was it?
I mean, that was a big deal. It was almost like a New Year's Eve. It was either going to be really negative or really kind of positive.
Well, yeah, and we hung in here to what, but 1:30 in the morning, yeah. Central Time?
We broadcast. Ray, were you listening that night, or did you hit the sack?
Listen, I went to bed,
yeah.
And then I got up later, you know, because I wanted to see the stuff. And, you know, the real excitement was happening, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock,
yeah.
3 o'clock
yeah.
in the morning.
We broadcast that night for like 7 or 8 hours live.
Yeah.
Continuously with the same host.
Yeah.
Right.
And
yeah.
So we had to set some kind of record there. I don't know what it was.
It was marathon. And the thing was, about 10 minutes after we left the air, we said, we don't know how long this is going to go, but stay tuned and Newscast will keep you up to date. And about by the time I got home, about 10 minutes later, the call had been made.
That Trump had won. Yeah. Wow.
And then we had to stay up to see the speech by Trump.
Yeah.
Right.
I got home that night. Or that morning, and my wife's like going to bed, or she's actually in bed already, and I'm like kicking back on the recliner, like getting my chips out, chips and dip, like the night was just beginning. I was like, I want to see this, you know, this history right here being made.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it was. Well, what we're going to do today, a very special edition of Today's Issues, this being the last live Today's Issues. Tomorrow is trivia, but it's pre-recorded, so we have the honor of being here today. We want to take a look back at the year 2016, some of the big events. And the reality is, guys, one of the biggest events, I guess, politically speaking, and certainly was the election. We're going to be dealing with that. But was really yesterday, in the last couple of days, starting last Friday with that resolution where the United States abstained and has a lot of people who are Israel supporters upset. And then the speech by John Kerry yesterday certainly didn't help the controversy any at all, where John Kerry, in a speech to the State Department, basically doubled down on what had happened in the UN on Friday, and certainly defended the Obama administration's decision to abstain in that very controversial resolution, which condemned Israel once again. First time in 40 years that the United States openly in the UN has not supported Israel. Well, yesterday, Secretary of State John Kerry doubling down on it, defending it, and spending almost an hour, most of it condemning Israel for standing in the way of bringing peace to the Middle East. Wanted to play you a couple of cuts of John Kerry. And then we are going to play for you, in case you haven't heard, late last night, Israel time, Prime Minister Netanyahu responded to that speech by John Kerry. So first, what we want to do is play you a cut from Secretary of State John Kerry, where he's talking about the impossibility of a Jewish state being democratic. Let's hear that.
Today, there are a number, similar number of Jews and Palestinians living between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. They have a choice. They can choose to live together in one state, or they can separate into two states. But here is a fundamental reality. If the choice is one state, Israel can either be Jewish or democratic. It cannot be both. And it won't ever really be at peace.
Well,
moreover, the Palestinians will never...
We can fade that down. I'm totally confused by that statement, Ray, and I want to get your comments on this. But anybody who's familiar with the state of Israel today, it is a Jewish state, but there are at least a million Palestinians who enjoy citizenship in the state of Israel, which is a democracy. But John Kerry says that's impossible. That cannot happen. But it is happening.
You know, what he said, Fred, flies in the face of reality. That to accept what Kerry said, you have to deny everything that's happened in Israel, well, since 1967, since the retaking of the city of Jerusalem. I mean, you have in Israel the most the only democratic state in the Middle East. It's the safest place for Arabs to be. It's the safest place for Muslims to be. They have more freedom there than they have in any other nation in the Middle East. How could John Kerry say you can either be Jewish or democratic, but you can't be both, unless he just closed his eyes to the reality of the last 40 years? And that's all I can think of, that he decided this doesn't matter. Ideology rules all.
You know, Ray, this is to me one of the most anti-Semitic comments made by a public official, to my knowledge, in recent history. To say, can you imagine if Netanyahu did a speech and said, "You can be Muslim or you can be Democratic, but right. you cannot be both"?
Oh, they would be all over him.
Yeah, yeah, and I wouldn't even go as far to say that.
Right.
But another note is I read yesterday where Bibi Netanyahu has reached out directly, has attempted to reach out directly to the Palestinians hundreds of times, but they will not talk directly to him because they don't want to legitimize Israel as a state.
It's a simple fact that Netanyahu has said he will sit down with anyone, anywhere, with no preconditions, to talk about what it will take to bring peace to that region of the world. It's not for lack of trying on the Israeli side that there's a problem over there. So, Fred, what did you make of why did John Kerry say you could be Jewish or Democratic, but you can't be both?
Well, that's what puzzles me, because that is today's reality. Israel is there as a nation. It is a Jewish nation.
Right.
But those of us who have visited there once, twice, and perhaps many times know there are many Arabs who live there who are citizens. They are elected. Mm-hmm. They are elected to the Knesset. The Israeli Knesset can get real interesting sometimes, because if you ever watch some of the debates in the Knesset, you often have Palestinians disagreeing with the Jewish members. But there's an open debate because both sides have been democratically elected to the Knesset. And for John Kerry to almost back away from reality, I mean, this is extremely puzzling. But the only reason I can give for this, he had to introduce that narrative into the speech yesterday to justify his overall argument that there must be a two-state solution.
Well, let me ask you in the bigger picture, guys. Can you remember a time when any administration has made such an incendiary speech so near the end of their time in office? I could sort of, not really, but I could at least sort of understand it if Kerry had made this kind of speech 6 months ago. Why do you light the fire this way when you're literally, 20 days, 3 weeks from being out of office? What's the message we're sending here?
Well, I think I draw the similarity to a drive-by shooting.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, yeah. I'm just going to throw the grenade in there, and then I'm getting out of town.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stay around. And of course, let's face it, too, is that the Democrats, whether it's Barack Obama, John Kerry, whoever it is, they know they have the media on their side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another whole chapter of this. Want to get on to another cut here from Kerry's speech yesterday, because one of the criticisms coming out of the resolution vote, which the United States ambassador abstained from on Friday, was that the United States was behind this, orchestrated this whole resolution. Now, yesterday, I'm going to play what John Kerry had to say addressing that accusation yesterday, and then we are going to listen to the response from Prime Minister Netanyahu. So let's play that clip first from John Kerry.
We also strongly reject the notion that somehow the United States was the driving force behind this resolution. The Egyptians and Palestinians had long made clear to all of us, to all of the international community, their intention to bring a resolution to a vote before the end of the year. And we communicated that to the Israelis, and they knew it anyway. The United States did not draft or originate this resolution, nor did we put it forward. It was drafted by Egypt. It was drafted and, I think, introduced by Egypt, which is one of Israel's closest friends in the region, in coordination with the Palestinians and others. And during the time of the process, as it went out, we made clear to others, including those on the Security Council, that it was possible that if the resolution were to be balanced and it were to include references to incitement and to terrorism, that it was possible the United States would then not block it.
Well, you know, as I say, there he is, John Kerry, unequivocally saying we had nothing to do with putting together this resolution. That it was, and he says, I think it was the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Right.
You know,
right.
You're giving a whole speech at the State Department yesterday on this issue, and you're still not clear about who. But here's the reality. Here's the reality. And now I want to go to, and then we'll get comments from you, Walker, and from Ray. I want to go to now a portion of the speech last night from Prime Minister Netanyahu responding to John Kerry and what happened at the UN last Friday. And in this response, you are going to hear what the Prime Minister of Israel says, what he says, who was behind this resolution. Let's hear from Netanyahu.
I have no doubt that our alliance will endure the profound disagreement we have had with the Obama administration and will become even stronger in the future. But now I must express my deep disappointment with the speech today of John Kerry, a speech that was almost as unbalanced as the anti-Israel resolution passed at the UN last week. I don't seek applause. I seek the security and peace and prosperity and the future of the Jewish state. The Jewish people have sought their place under the sun for 3,000 years, and we're not about to be swayed by mistaken policies that have caused great, great damage. Israelis do not need to be lectured about the importance of peace by foreign leaders. Israel's hand has been extended in peace to its neighbors from day one, from its very first day. Israel looks forward to working with President-elect Trump and with the American Congress, Democrats and Republicans alike, to mitigate the damage that this resolution has done and ultimately to repeal it. Israel hopes that the outgoing Obama administration will prevent any more damage being done to Israel at the UN in its waning days. I wish I could be comforted by the promise that the U.S. says we will not bring any more resolutions to the UN. That's what they said about this previous resolution. We have it on absolutely incontestable evidence that the United States organized, advanced, and brought this resolution.
All right, there you have it. John Kerry stating yesterday, United States had nothing to do with this resolution, did not originate it, did not help to draft it. Prime Minister Netanyahu saying, we have it on indisputable evidence. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what the United States did. He says the Israeli intelligence, Ray, which is about the best in the world,
right.
has told them unequivocally that the Obama administration originated, orchestrated, and put this resolution together. Easy to conclude from this, someone is lying.
Well, number one, I think that John Kerry is playing with words to some degree. I mean, he wants to say this originated with the Egyptians and somebody else wrote it. But does anybody have any doubt at all that what Prime Minister Netanyahu said is exactly true? It doesn't really matter who sat at the computer and typed out the words.
Right.
Does anybody doubt that John Kerry and the U.S. State Department and our diplomats were working behind the scenes with Egypt and the Palestinians to help craft this resolution? Mm-hmm. They knew all about it. And as a matter of fact, basically, what happened at the United Nations is exactly what John Kerry and the State Department wanted to happen. In this case, John Kerry is simply not believable.
Yeah, and honestly, it doesn't help them either way, because if John Kerry and the State Department admits, if they're claiming ignorance, you know, we didn't really know what was going on, we just kind of showed up at the last minute. That in itself is shameful. That you have this anti-Semitic actions going on at the UN, which we fund a third of it, and we don't know what's going on there. That in itself, which I don't believe that actually, but if that's true, that's shameful itself. You don't know what's going on. What are you doing? And then secondly, if he is not telling the truth and they knew all along what was going on, that's shameful also. So really, either way, John Kerry's admitting wrongdoing here.
You know,
it's a terrible whitewash.
Oh, yeah, it is. Facts. I mean, and I guess in some ways, gentlemen, we shouldn't be surprised by this, because the relationship between Obama and Netanyahu has been terrible. The headline this morning from the Associated Press: relations between Obama and Netanyahu camps hit rock bottom. No kidding.
Yeah,
it's been there for a long time. Let's be honest about this. Mm-hmm. Even the mainstream media admits. I mean, they can see the tension. These reporters in the room. When Netanyahu has come to visit, and he sits in the White House there with Obama, you can see the tension. And there was that incident back a couple of years ago when Netanyahu was at the White House to meet with Obama, and Obama said, I'm sorry, I got to run. I got another appointment. Yeah. What an insult.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely incredible. But here's the other thing about the – go ahead, Ray.
Well, at one point, John Kerry actually had the gall to say that the Obama administration – is the most Israel-friendly administration in American history. That's laughable.
And that's why we're laughing, because we're aware of the reality of it. You know, this story about tensions between – this is not something that was cooked up by conservatives.
No.
Everybody knows this.
The actions by this administration the past 7 or 8 years has been – let's look at the facts – and what's on paper and reality. Let's look at the way we wish things could be and the way we would like them to appear, and then let's just say that that's how they are, and then somehow everyone will go along with it. And so that's exactly what they're – just like Obama says, you know, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor.
Yeah.
You know, he said that for a year or two. Well, no, nobody can keep their doctor. Not many people can keep their doctor. And so it's the same thing. They say one thing, but reality is another thing, and this really doesn't surprise me. That's what they're doing here.
Here's the reality, and here's the summation of the speech yesterday. John Kerry, the White House, he was speaking for Barack Obama. Apparently, Barack Obama was supposed to give a similar speech, but he handed it over to John Kerry. John Kerry yesterday mentions the settlements on the West Bank 48 times. He blames those settlements for the lack of moving forward with a two-state solution. What Prime Minister Netanyahu noted again and again and again yesterday in his response, it's not the settlements at all. That is just an effort to move you away from the reality. Here's the reality. The reason there isn't a two-state solution, because the Palestinian leadership does not want it. And here's what Netanyahu says. the main stumbling block to any peace in the Middle East is the refusal mm-hmm. of the Palestinians and their friends in the Arab world to recognize the Jewish state of Israel. Mm-hmm. They will not do that.
How do you sit down at a table with somebody who wishes you were dead?
Yeah.
Who does not accept the legitimacy of your country? You don't negotiate with people like that because mm-hmm. there is nothing to negotiate. So I think Israel has been saying for years, if anybody on the other side will sit down and negotiate in good faith, we can come up with a solution. But it takes two sides to have a negotiation.
And you know, Ray, what I was telling Fred yesterday off the air is, really, I think this is going to turn back and bite the Obama administration once he leaves office, because what he's done here is he's incited action from Trump. Trump's going to come in, and hopefully, best case scenario is he takes some sort of action towards the UN to make them pay for this. So I think it's going to backfire, because before this, nobody was talking about defunding the UN on behalf of the U.S.
Right.
But now everyone's talking about that. And so I think it's really going to come back to bite, and hopefully we'll see friendlier actions on behalf of the Trump administration.
You know, we've got a lot more in the program to say about Donald Trump, but he's broken the paradigm a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And we saw it again yesterday when he took to Twitter and he said, "We cannot continue to let Israel be treated with such total disdain and disrespect. They used to have a great friend in the U.S., but not anymore. The beginning of the end was the horrible Iran deal, and now this," he means the U.N. "Stay strong, Israel. January 20th is fast approaching."
Yeah.
We've never seen anything like that from an incoming administration during the interim period. So the whole playing field of American politics has completely shifted with the election of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. And we can only hope. You know, there are Democrats who recognize the folly of this resolution in John Kerry's speech yesterday. There were Democrats on Fox News this morning saying this was wrong. You know, Steny Hoyer is out publicly condemning what John Kerry was saying yesterday. Chuck Schumer, of course, Senator
right.
Chuck Schumer of New York. We mentioned yesterday Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is as far left as you can get in the Democratic Party, but totally, and yes, she is Jewish, and she represents a Jewish area there in South Florida. Mm-hmm. But she was not afraid yesterday to condemn in the strongest terms the Obama administration for doing this. Even Nancy Pelosi was very guarded in her response to this.
Right.
These people know that John Kerry and Barack Obama have set off an explosion here that is going to hurt the Democrats. This is going to come back and bite them 2 years from now in 2018, and they know it.
And I'll say one last thing, and then we can move on. But like you just said, the Democrats don't seem to get it. The reason Trump got elected is because of actions like this, these far-left
right.
actions that mainstream America does not like. And so if Obama wants to be the cause of losing more Democratic seats come in the next 2 years, this is not the way he needs to act.
No. Hey, listen, when we come back, I want to make one more point with regards to what we've been talking about, Israel and the relationship with the United States. Ray, I want you to get some comments from you, because you're well studied in all of this. What does this have to do with biblical prophecy?
Okay.
What is this, what I would call this insane hatred of this tiny little nation of Israel and the Jewish people? It cannot be explained rationally, so there's got to be a spiritual explanation in all of this, and I think Scripture has a lot to say about it. It'd be very interesting, your comments when we come back. Also, when we come back, want to talk a little bit more about that other big story of the year, the election in 2016, and what happened in this country. A fundamental shift occurred. We'll talk about perhaps the reasons why. You're listening to Today's Issues. We're back right after the break.
American Family Association President Tim Wildman.
As we come upon a new year, we don't know what's around the corner as far as news goes, but I tell you one thing, we will be here to cover it and give it a biblical perspective on today's issues on American Family Radio. We'll keep covering and commenting on the news, and we thank you for listening. And we pray that you will have a blessed and happy 2017.
Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
You know I didn't marry you because the earth moved the first time we kissed. I married you because you're a good man. And through the years, I have been moved time and time again by your dedication to me and by your good example to our sons and our grandkids. I guess I could say you became the man of my dreams. Oh, Harold, I know you can't talk now, but somewhere deep inside, I know you still love me too.
How's he doing today, Mrs. Nelson?
Well, you know, about the same as always. But I think he heard me today. We've been having some nice conversation.
In sickness and in health, godly marriage helps hold us together as a society. A message from the American Family Association.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next. Donald Trump supporters are no longer welcome to dine at Cafe 8 1/2, a mom-and-pop Italian joint in Honolulu. The owners posted a bright yellow sign on the front door. If you voted for Trump, you can't eat here. No Nazis! Subtle, don't you think? As you might expect, the backlash has been stronger than a piece of garlic bread. The head of the National Federation of Republican Assemblies says the sign is discriminatory and smacks of racism and hate. Our friends at FoxNews.com tracked down the owners of Cafe 8 1/2. They say, to their knowledge, they have not turned away any pro-Trump diners. But I suspect there's no need to, seeing how the sign was posted on the front door. And as we all know, there's no better way to get a case of indigestion than by eating a plate of spaghetti and meatballs with a side of intolerance. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And indeed, welcome back to this Thursday edition of Today's Issues. Fred Jackson sitting in for Tim today with me. It's Ray Pritchard in Dallas and Walker Wildman. And we've been talking about, and we are talking today about the big stories of this year, 2016. And as we noted off the top, probably one of the big stories in history that will go down in history is what happened with regards to the U.S. abstaining in that resolution last Friday, basically condemning Israel, and then the speech from John Kerry yesterday. Ray, just before the break, we were talking about most people, whether you're Democrats, Republicans, we're not even talking politics here, but when you look at the condemnation of this tiny state of Israel, the only democracy in that part of the world, and simply trying to exist and do their best, surrounded by enemies, trying to defend its very existence, and yet you have this ongoing condemnation, and the latest coming from John Kerry and Barack Obama. One has to look beyond rational thought here and go to, I believe, this is all part of the spiritual warfare that we've seen against the Jewish people down through the years.
You know, if you go back to the Bible, to the fundamental text in Genesis chapter 12, where God called Abram, later to become Abraham, from Ur of the Chaldees, and said, leave this city, go to a land, that's the land of the Bible, the land of Canaan, the land of Israel, to the land that I will give you, I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you. And Genesis 12:3, it's very interesting, Fred, says, and I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. Isn't it interesting that in the very first mention of what would become the nation of Israel, there is both a promise and a warning that those who bless the Jewish people will be blessed by God, and those who curse them will be judged by God. It's almost God's way of saying, you are my people, but there are going to be those, because they don't like me, they are not going to like you. I think there is a spiritual warfare component to this. There's a reason we call the Jewish people the chosen people. They were chosen by God. The land was given to them by God. And they are hated irrationally. And, you know, what's happening today in the Middle East? I mean, just go back 70 some years, Hitler and the Holocaust, but you go through the pogroms and the persecutions that go all the way back into the Old Testament. The Jewish people have had to fight for survival for 3,500 years, and they are still fighting for survival today. And frankly, guys, I think their existence in the world today is attributable not so much to military power, though that's great, or to wisdom or wealth. I think it is the hand of Almighty God that has upheld them over all these centuries.
It's amazing, and I've read the stories of the three wars, I guess, that have occurred since the state of Israel was reformed again in 1948. And there are some incredible stories of what has happened to the Syrian tank drivers up right there, the Golan Heights. I mean, Israel vastly outnumbered, and these tank drivers come out of those tanks and say, you know, and they're giving up to the Israelis. And how could that be? And these tank drivers who are then questioned by the Israeli soldiers said every one of them felt this pressure inside the tank that they were driving, and they had to come out. And they basically saw the hand of God. Wow. In all of this, so there's some incredible stories that are out there, but you know the bottom line in all of this, and Ray, you've done a terrific job of taking us through this. I believe that one of the reasons the United States has been blessed so much is our support for the nation of Israel, and I've talked to some folks this morning, and I want to reiterate it once again, folks. The United States has not turned against Israel. Barack Obama and John Kerry and a few others have. But the United States has not turned against Israel. And that is, I believe, one of the reasons why Donald Trump was elected this year. His unequivocal support during the Republican primaries and during the election campaign for the state of Israel, and even in the last 48 hours, his unequivocal support. I think you were quoting him, Ray, a few moments ago. Things are going to change on the 20th, 3 weeks from tomorrow.
Right.
Things are going to change. And Prime Minister Netanyahu knows that. Walker, just before we go on to the 2016 election, any more comments on this?
No, I'm looking forward. 3 weeks can't get here quick enough. And I hope that Trump makes, we really don't need a president who tries to ride the fence and be the middleman here with the Palestinians and Israelis. We can be hospitable to the Middle Eastern countries, the Muslim countries, but we need to make it clear to all countries that we are friends with Israel, we will protect Israel, and we will defend Israel in all situations.
We're going to be watching Donald Trump very carefully because he has made some promises with regards to Israel, and one of them being he says he's going to move the United States Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. That promise has been made by other presidential candidates in the past, hasn't happened, and that's one of the things we're going to be looking for. But the election story of 2016, that is going to go down. I think was Time Magazine put Donald Trump on the front cover, Man of the Year. Not that Time Magazine particularly likes Donald Trump, but they put him on the cover. But it is true. He is the story. His campaign is the story. And Ray, it's amazing. How did Donald Trump go from being the candidate that most people, including most conservatives, dismissed as a joke when he made the announcement, to the man who not only won the GOP nomination, but the presidency? It is an incredible political story in the history of this country.
I was thinking about your question there, and I tried to roll back in my mind, not a year ago, but 2 years ago, say to December of 2014, and Trump, you know, he would not announce for six more months after that. So if you go back 2 years, and if somebody had said to you, okay, Fred or Walker, what are the odds 2 years ago, what are the odds that our next president will be Donald Trump? What odds would you have given 2 years ago of that?
Well, you know, I have to be honest. I was one of those that kind of laughed and said, this guy can't be serious.
No way. Yeah. I would have said 1,000,000 to 1. Yeah. Just I didn't think he was ever going to get in the race, much less do what he did. So, I mean, this is the most amazing political story, I don't think just of the year, but of our lifetime. We've never seen anything else like this.
Yeah, well, it shows that Americans were looking for a non-politician, you know, because we had 16 to 17 candidates on the Republican side at the beginning of the primaries, 16 of them, of which were traditionally politicians. You take away Ben Carson, he's not a traditional politician.
Right.
But the rest of them were senators, governors, congressmen. And so America was hungry for a non-politician, hungry for a billionaire, I guess.
Well, and let's be honest, most conservatives really missed the mood of the country early on.
Yes.
I mean, most conservatives had their favor, whether it was Senator Ted Cruz or Senator Rubio, Ben Carson, Governor Huckabee. I mean, those were the people that were put up there. former Governor Bush.
Right.
So you had all those candidates out there.
And they're all well qualified.
Sure.
They're good men, and everybody thought, for sure.
Yeah.
And then this guy comes with weird hairdo out of New York, who's got this TV show and The Apprentice or whatever it was that he had on.
Right.
And everybody kind of said, you know, he's got a lot of money, and this is a way to get publicity. But then, guys, we saw the crowds. The first indication I had were the crowds that were showing up at his rallies.
Yeah.
That was absolutely amazing. People lined up for hours trying to get in, and then you realize something was going on. And then, Ray, in the evangelical community, I think most of evangelicals early on were picking somebody else, had their favorites.
Right.
But then one of the exceptions, though, was the pastor, First Baptist Dallas. You're somewhat familiar with him, Dr. Robert Jeffress.
Right.
And how did he handle that in his church? You were a member there at the time. How did he handle that? He got a lot of condemnation from evangelicals.
Oh, he did. And that was quite controversial. If you roll back the clock to a year or so ago, quite controversial when he came out so strongly in favor of Trump, because the natural choice from the First Baptist point of view would be Ted Cruz. I mean, he's a Texas senator.
Yeah.
He's spoken at the church about 2 years ago, and his values very much line up with, you know, most of the people in the church. Mm. But I think Robert Jeffress looked at Trump and said, here is a man who speaks the language of the people.
Yeah.
He can be elected. And I think that's what, I mean, he saw that before a whole lot of other evangelical leaders did, and so he took a lot of grief for it, but vindicated in the end.
You know, Ray, as I look back on this election, there are things at the time maybe we disagreed with, maybe we wish people would have made different decisions. You know, my comment coming up does not invalidate that. But I will say, looking back, there are some times where the only thing that can explain what happened is the hand of God and providence on our country, you know, because if Robert Jeffress and others would not have befriended Trump at that moment in the election, then, you know, maybe they wouldn't have the influence they do today. And so, you know, they took a lot of flack for it, but we do need, while there are certain parts of Trump and his personality that we have disagreed with, we do need Christians and Christian leaders that do have his ear to an extent.
Well, and he's our president now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And no matter who voted for who, he is the president of the whole country now. And I'm frankly glad you've got people like Pastor Jeffress, and you got Franklin Graham, who clearly is a good friend. And, you know, we've talked with James Robinson, who's had influence in this pastor's advisory council. I would not say Trump is an evangelical, because I don't think he would say that about himself, but he certainly understands our concerns, and he certainly wants our input. So I'm glad for guys like Franklin Graham and the others that he is listening to and talking to.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be interesting to see, because it was we had a discussion about this morning about, you know, there's been talk that he's got this close group who may be his spiritual advisors that I believe is still in place, and how much he may rely on them. And I'm hoping people like Franklin Graham, like people like Dr. Robert Jeffress and others are going to be called upon.
Yeah,
I hope we're going to see in a President Trump a realization that, you know, he just didn't need the vote of the evangelicals. He needs the wisdom of many of these evangelical leaders.
Well, and he's picked some strong, outspoken Christians for his cabinet.
Amen.
And so he's going to be, there's going to be people around that big table who are in his cabinet and are fully committed to Jesus Christ and are going to speak up. And I'm really, I can't remember a time when we've had so many evangelical Christians in the presidential cabinet. That's got to be a good thing, I think.
It's an amazing thing. Of course, Vice President-elect Mike Pence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unapologetic in his testimony and how refreshing that is. And the other thing, too, I believe, in my experience, at least in my 40 years of journalism or so, I don't remember an election being prayed over more than this one at our church that I go to. The first time that I can remember that the day before the election, there was a special prayer meeting. And that occurred, Ray, right across the country.
You know, there was a Joel Rosenberg, who's a good friend of our ministry. You know, he's been on with us a number of times. There was a great prayer meeting going on in Jerusalem the night before the election.
Wow.
And Franklin Graham had the big one. And, you know, your church, many churches had one. Our ministry had an online prayer meeting, and hundreds and thousands of people came to pray. So maybe more than ever, Christians understood this was a watershed moment in our history. And God answered prayer.
Yeah, and Ray, you know, I'll say, and Fred, that at times, for the past few years, we've, in the past few elections, we have given ourselves, the evangelicals, a hard time for our non-engagement, our not being engaged enough, not knowing the issues, not voting our values. But I will say, after 8 years of having to get onto ourselves, it was refreshing to see that evangelical Christians actually did show up at the ballot box and did make a difference. And so all of the work and the correction did pay off.
Now, AFA was very involved as far as getting information out to the voters, our voter guide. Tell us a little bit more about that, Walker, how all of that came together, because it was a huge job.
Yeah, well, we brought on to our staff about 2 years ago Rob Chambers, which he worked here with the local legislator in Mississippi. But Rob, and I'll give him the credit for this, he has been great at orchestrating statewide action and getting voters at the local level involved. And so what he did and what AFA Action did, which is our 501c4 affiliate, AFA Action sent voter guides, which is not a – our voter guides are not a where do they stand on this issue, yes or no. Our voter guides are very comprehensive. They get into who gives the candidates money. What's the candidate's voting record? Who's endorsed the candidates? Who's not endorsed the candidate? So we get into all that, and we put that voter guide into the hands of voters and our supporters, and we did that in all 50 states. We sent out hundreds of thousands of emails into these states and got the voter guide into the states and just encouraged Christians just to vote. Vote your values. You know, we don't have to tell you who to vote for. We trust you to be smart and wise enough to make your own decision on that. But we just equip individuals to vote and to vote their values, and we did that extensively throughout the election cycle.
Ray, what would you say to this proposal also? I think there was an energized electorate on the conservative side because of the reality of religious freedoms being under attack in this country over the last few years, Christians losing their jobs because they wouldn't bake a cake for a homosexual wedding. I mean, those stories came to the forefront, the Todd Starnes of this world here at American Family Radio. We repeatedly told people about this. And suddenly, I think in people's minds, it really kind of gelled and came together that there was a fundamental change about in this country, and something had to be done to stop it.
You know, I'm sitting here thinking, what kind of discussion would we be having, Fred and Walker, if 3 weeks from tomorrow it was Hillary Clinton to be... And, you know, all the polls said going into that, you know, the polls, they were wrong, but the pollster said she was going to win. On that very point, clearly Hillary Clinton, her administration would not be friendly to evangelicals, to evangelical Christianity, to religious liberty, to the pro-life movement. And Hillary's gone as far as you could go on the gay marriage issue. Mm. So I think people understood. And I'm thinking here, Fred, not just evangelicals, but just general religious conservatives, let's say conservative Jews, conservative Catholics, conservative Lutherans, say, from the mainline denominations, if just general conservative people said enough is enough is enough, you know, they see the stuff that's going on with the bathroom controversy that swept the nation. People going, no, something is really wrong here. People are trying to make a fundamental change. Well, I think Barack Obama said he wanted to fundamentally transform America. He got pretty far down that road. Mm-hmm. I'm glad Americans finally said enough is enough is enough.
You know, one of the things, just mentioning the fundamental changes, I think the AFA's boycott, Walker, of Target brought home, and it wasn't just that corporation, it brought home the dangers of a left ideology to the safety when it comes right down to the changing rooms in our department stores.
Yeah.
And what was over 1 million people have signed on to that.
Yeah, and what initiated that really is North Carolina, the city of Charlotte, and our listeners probably have heard this too many times, they're probably tired of it, but the city of Charlotte passed an ordinance which essentially created a bathroom and changing facility free-for-all. You know, you can go to whichever facility you feel like on any given day, which is dangerous because you have grown men using the same restroom as little girls and the same changing area. But what North Carolina did was the state legislator counteracted that and basically said, you know, we're going to use common sense law here. We're going to allow men, biological men, to use the men's room and biological women to use the women's rooms. Well, you know, companies like Target, while they didn't say this specifically, they were essentially trying to come down on North Carolina, just like PayPal and other corporations did. Well, Target, instead of just making a public statement on North Carolina, they themselves came out and said, you know what, in our Target stores and our almost 2,000 Target stores across the country, we're going to allow men access to women's facilities. And so the AFA came out the next day and issued and initiated a boycott of Target, which, as you mentioned, has gained now, well, in the first 7 days, it gained 1 million signatures, which is one of the fastest growing petitions that I know of. And now we have 1.5 million people who are boycotting Target. And so that's the kind of response that people have given, thankfully. And we've told corporate America that we don't want this social engineering crammed down our throats.
And Ray, when we see, we have to be encouraged by this, because I think many times, even amongst, you know, evangelical Christians, a bit of depression was setting in as to, you know, right, what is happening in our countries. We're becoming strangers in our own countries. We're becoming Hillary Clinton's basket of deplorables.
Yeah.
And people just said, wait a minute, I think I love this country too much just to sit back and complain and whine. Let's do something about it. And that energy went towards Donald Trump.
Well, you know, this on the bathroom issue, this is one that we didn't have to argue real hard about.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to go to church, you know? You don't have to read the Bible to understand there's a difference between little boys and little girls. This is an issue that's biological. This is an issue that's by nature. Mm-hmm. So the people of America, they heard what Target was doing, but they understand something's up here that's not right. We didn't pick this fight. This isn't something AFA went looking for, right? But we didn't back down from it either. And I think this led to, I don't want to say the bathroom bill is why Trump got elected, because that would not be true, but it is indicative of the fact that many basically conservative Americans said, we're not going to put up with this anymore. We are going to vote for something different and something new, even if we don't know completely what Donald Trump is going to do. We'd rather have that unknown than keep going down the road we've been going on. So good for the American people for taking that stand.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the other things I think we learned coming out of the election of 2016 is that, and there's always been a bit of a difference in approach to and worldviews between young people and older people.
Mm-hmm.
But we learned in this particular election cycle, there were a whole bunch of young people, millennials, that really liked Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that didn't make a lot of sense on the front end of things. Bernie Sanders is a senior citizen.
Right.
I'm being kind here.
He's an old guy.
Yeah. But they love what Bernie Sanders had to say, young people. And then we've had, in the wake of the election results, you've seen a lot of, you know, college campuses, and, you know, we've had the snowflake remarks and everybody upset about what is happening in our country. And, you know, media goes out and sticks a microphone in their face. And you know, our country has changed and the country's going down the tubes. And this is my country, not your country. All of this sort of thing. But it goes to another project here at American Family Association, Walker, that you're involved with, our Engage program, because we're not going to give up on our young people.
Right.
There's still an avenue that has to be tapped into here as far as how do we reach these young people who have been under the influence of this, what I'll call left-wing ideology from their school days and through their universities and through our media.
Yeah.
But the AFA, to its credit, is reaching out to them.
Yeah, the one thing that AFA is doing, and when I talk about what AFA is doing, I'm really talking about what our supporters are doing because they make what we do possible. We just actually carry out the physical work. But what AFA is doing with partnership with Engage Magazine, which is one of our divisions here at AFA, we're trying to engage millennials on the issues of the day from a biblical perspective. And that's not what you get very often when you're a young person. You usually, you know, you go to school, you hang out around your peers. You don't get much meat, if you will. And so that's what Engage is trying to do. And also, you know, college campuses naturally tilt to the left and naturally tilt more socialist. You know, everything should be free, more libertarian. But I don't think young people, when they grow up, you know, studies show that they become more conservative when they actually get a job, start paying taxes, and have to foot their own way. And so our young people are in trouble. They need to be more informed, and we need to do a better job. Honestly, the churches need to do a better job of discipling young people. But I will say, once these people become actually a voting age and they get into the workforce and stuff, naturally they'll become more conservative. And I hope that's the case with some of these people.
Ray, I know you're on the road a lot and you're teaching and preaching God's word, and not only here in the United States, but around the world. What do you see in interacting with the young people who come out to listen to your teaching?
You know, there's no question that there's a whole generation, and Walker, you're speaking right to the point. They are looking for encouragement, and they need mentors. Mm-hmm. They need older men and women to come alongside and challenge them. And my observation of the Christian millennials, the young evangelical millennials, they reject phoniness and double talk. But when they see somebody who is sold out for Jesus Christ, who will love them and invest in them, they are quite willing to follow. They want to be challenged to spend their lives in a way that matters for the kingdom of God. So I will say, Walker, a thousand kudos to you and to your team for what they're doing with Engage, because this is exactly what the church needs to be doing to help prepare the next generation.
Amen.
Yeah, and what do we say to parents who are listening today with young people? Because that has become the topic of many books, that people are writing out there. How do I deal with my teenage daughter, my teenage son, who is... There's so many areas that they're influenced to the other side, the dark side of the spiritual side of things. And I know AFA is a source of information for parents, too, and encouragement.
Yeah, Ray has more knowledge than I do on this because he's a parent himself. But I will say from my perspective that parents, the best disciples and the best disciplers are the parents.
That's right.
They have the most influence on their children. They spend the most time. They spend more time with their children than even the schoolhouse does. And so parents, just keep up the discipleship and keep being a positive influence on your children.
And in 2017, AFA will be here to encourage people to do that.
Yes, we will
be a source
here.
Of information. All right, Fred Jackson sitting in for Tim today with Ray Pritchard and Walker Wildman. We have much more ahead. We're going to discuss a little bit more about the evangelical vote in 2016, but also the role the media played in all of this. And they really took the gloves off and showed their face. Back with much more of today's issues right after the news.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.